So the kirtan is nice. It reminds us that we are doing devotional service by learning editing. We're trying to do this as a service to Srila Prabhupada and the devotees and Lord Chaitanya. Learn some extra skill. Yesterday in the mail, I got this ISKCON Communications Journal from England. Have all of you seen this before? You know it? No, Satyaraj's is Vaishnav Journal. This comes from Shanak Rishi, the Director of Communications for Europe. And he's based in Oxford, Hare Krishna Mujwala. So I came across something in the book review section. There's a book review of Stephen Pressfield's book, The Legend of Beggar Vance. I wrote the name on the board. Have you all heard of this? Yeah, there was an article in BTG about it. This book is a story about a golf tournament, a golf match in America. And there are two characters who resemble Arjuna and Krishna. One is a golfer. His name is Ranulf Juna. The R is abbreviated, so it becomes Arjuna. He represents Arjuna. And Beggar Vance, his caddy, who represents Bhagavan, Krishna. So this book is reviewed in this magazine. And it begins like this. You'll recognize maybe the mistake. We talked about this yesterday. Stephen Pressfield's The Legend of Beggar Vance. The lights went off. It should be. Huh. Should be Stephen Pressfield's Legend of Beggar Vance. The is not required after a possessive. Well, they reviewed Satyaraj's book also. It's a question of their audience. I think it's a question of their audience. They're trying to... Okay. We have this class set aside for talking about verbs. We started the discussion yesterday, and I did a lot of reading yesterday from these pages. And we got into some details that might not seem so relevant. You're not doing any editing right now, perhaps, probably. So these aren't things that you're going to use immediately, except maybe Mother Ishodian. She might be using some of these things that we're discussing just in the course of her work. So I don't want to get too much into things that are irrelevant to you. You'll lose interest and you won't learn anything. But what I am doing by putting this information out is alerting you to the types of mistakes that editors can make or writers can make. I certainly don't expect you to know all these details at the end of this week or at the end of the course. But these are things that... that I'm just trying to increase your awareness of. You should be aware of some of the discussion about verbs. You know, you should know what are some of the problems you can have with verbs. At one point, you'll have to know when to look something up. If you're doing some editing, you'll have to be able to recognize mistakes. So I'm trying to give you some idea where you'll find mistakes when you're actually editing. I think we'll just review the introduction she gave to verbs because it tells us about, most generally, it tells us very generally about verbs. She wrote, the verb is the business end of the sentence. The sentence is a reason for being. It's where the action is. A verb is easy to spot. Just look for the moving target. the center of activity, the part that tells you what's going on. The verb is often the most interesting word in the sentence. It's also the most complicated because a verb expresses action. It has a dimension that other words lack. What's that dimension? Time. It can tell you, and it tells you whether something happened in the past, the present, or the future, or some combination of it. And the verb has another dimension. It varies according to the subject. Who is performing the action, or what is performing the action? I sneeze, he sneezes, they sneeze, and so on. It changes. Sneeze, sneezes, they sneeze. So there are plenty of reasons a verb can go astray. The most common is that it doesn't match the subject. One is singular and the other is plural. The next most common reason is that the verb's timing is off. Its tense is off. Yesterday, she sneezes. That's an example. Then there are those little verbs that are hard to tell apart, like sit, set, rise, raise, lie, and lay. So those are some of the problems. We can pick up from where we left off yesterday. I think we're on the middle of page 36. How many of you read all these pages? Adi Purush, Kavi, Arvind. Yeah, up to 41. You did. What? You stopped at 39? You lost your concentration. Okay, does anybody have any question about the eyes words? In the middle of page 36, eyes in our heads. It should read, adding eyes to nouns and cross out the word verbs creates useful verbs, sometimes. Anybody have any questions about eyes? They're new. Let's see what she says about it. See, as I remember, she just doesn't like it because they're new. They're not much better.
Why she names them borrows?
Well, first of all, she doesn't think they're all bad. Some of them, she said, are useful. And she says that it's a legitimate thing. You can add I-Z-E to the end of the word, just like you can add something at the beginning, like pre or un. Yet there can be too much of a good thing, and that's what has happened with eyes. Verbs should be lively little devils, and adding eyes to a word doesn't give it life. Then she mentions these horrors that didn't catch on. Credibilize means make it believable, right? So instead of saying, let's make it believable, somebody says, let's credibilize it. She doesn't like that. Permanentize. We have ink markers, right? Some of them are advertised. Ink is permanent ink. So maybe that's a case where this eyes word is used. The manufacturers maybe said, let's permanentize our ink, something like that. She would just say it's too much. Respectabilize. Let's make it respectable. Respectabilize. Let's make things uniform. Uniformize. So she doesn't like. But some have gotten in. Colorize, I think, is a computer word. It's used in graphics. French. In French. Prioritize is, and finalize, those are related to management. Management books say, let's prioritize. Let's set our priorities. I have two pieces of advice about verbs ending in eyes. Don't coin any new ones. Don't use any recent ones you don't like. If we ignore them, maybe they'll go away. Are there any in ISKCON? Yeah, we Krishnize things. Utilize. There's a legitimate meaning for utilize. If I have a coin, a very thin coin. And I use it as a screwdriver to tighten a screw. I don't have a screwdriver. So I slip the coin into the head of the screw and I twist it. Then I'm utilizing the coin as a screwdriver. I'm using something that wasn't meant to be used that way. So that's utilization. That's what utilize means. Yeah, it wasn't invented for that purpose, wasn't made for that purpose. Like Sanskrit. Yeah. Roots of words are there. The roots in English are from Latin and Greek. If you study English, you'll discover the roots are often Latin and Greek. Many of the words have Latin and Greek roots. And if you can recognize those, then you can get some idea immediately what the word means. Sanskrit verbs can become nouns and pronouns. So? No, some verbs become nouns. It's true. I can't think of an example at the moment, but somewhat different. It's somewhat different. Not completely different. Let's look at the verbs that she thinks are useful. She thinks agonize, burglarize, fantasize, mesmerize, pulverize, and pasteurize are useful. Mesmerize is a word that applies to devotees who chant. Sometimes people ask Srila Prabhupada about the devotees being mesmerized. One professor said, it seems to me the devotees are mesmerized by chanting. And Prabhupada agreed, yes, that's a good thing. Their mind is entering into a kind of meditative state when they chant. They're just sitting and chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Mesmerized like brainwashed or something?
It refers to the state of the brain. It has to do with like a kind of a hypnotic state, mystifying state. Fantasize, of course, means to create fantasies. Pulverize, you break it into small pieces. She likes that. Pasteurize is a scientific term, refers to milk production. We're named after Pasteur, the inventor of the process for sanitizing milk. Agonize. I think today in the Bhagavatam class there was something about the agony of the gopis. So the gopis were agonizing that they were separated from Krishna. Krishna, I left at 9 o'clock. He went until 11? It's too bad that he didn't give class tomorrow. I mean, like Radha Govinda Maharaj is just giving class every day. He could have just been asked, you know, give class again the next day, then he could have had two classes. Krishna burglarized the gopis' hearts and sentiments. Huh? He took away their chastity and so many things. We often say, I haven't finalized my plans. Some devotees don't like that. I know some good writers who are devotees who don't like that. Okay, infinitely speaking, you have a whole page on that. She makes some remarks about which words should not be followed by an infinitive. What can't you understand? Well, it's just a question of what's become the standard usage. It's just a kind of an idiomatic thing. This is how it is in English. Good English speakers or good writers have done it this way, and therefore they've established this standard. It probably has to do with the original meaning of the word. If we would look closely at the original meaning of the word, there would be probably some reason for following it by one thing rather than another. She doesn't mention it. It has to do with established usage and probably the meanings of the words. We'd have to do some research into these examples. Yeah, a good dictionary would tell you the history. A good dictionary tells you the history of the meaning of the words, and some dictionaries on usage would give you examples of writers who helped to establish this particular usage and so on. You can find that information out. Not necessarily, it depends on how extensive the dictionary is. Some dictionaries give examples of good usage, some don't. When you select a dictionary, you might want to, if you're using English as a second language, it might be a good idea to get one that gives examples of good usage. What is from? American Heritage. That gives examples of usage. Yeah, this is a kind of difficulty that comes up with a lot of words in English. What preposition should come after a word to connect it to another word? For this, you have to consult manuals of usage usually. It's not so often just in the dictionaries. But you have books like manuals, one book called American Usage, another book called Modern English Usage, and they tell you these details, the words that connect certain words to other words. Pundarik, yesterday we discussed how we should not use the word the if it's in a book title, if it's preceded by a possessive. So this example I've written on the board, it's in a book review in the New ISKCON Communications Journal. There's a book review of this book, and it starts out, Stephen Pressfield's The Legend of Bagger Vance doesn't omit the article the. Okay, I gave you a handout on lookalikes called Ants at the Picnic. Does anybody have any questions about those? Any questions about lookalikes? Ants at the Picnic? Because if you've got ants all over, they all look alike. And they're all over the picnic. They ruin the picnic. And so therefore they're pesky. They're troublesome. And they're small. Ants are small, like these words. Huh. I don't know. I guess because they're small words and people don't pay close attention. So they make mistakes because of inattention or bad habits. She just says they're confusing. She says, who hasn't confused lie and lay? Yeah, because, I mean, you can use, like, the word lay, Arvind. You can say that for the meaning, for both meanings. You can say, she laid down, she laid down. She laid down to take some rest. And you can use the same form of the verb lay to mean something else. She lays it there. It's not quite the same form. She lays something there. She puts something there. So there's some confusion about those. You have to be careful when you're using them. Okay, bottom of page 36. Happy endings, dreamed or dreamt. A lot of times I hear foreigners pronounce the ED on words that end in ED, like dreamed, smelled, learned. I've heard this, devotees who are from India often do this, devotees from South America do it. But it's not pronounced, it's just smelled, dreamed. So some of these form the past tense by with either E or D. Some of them have dropped the ED altogether and just used T. So those are there. We won't get into the details if you don't have any questions about them. You want to talk about the verb wrote? The lookalikes. You mean the lookalikes? Generally, the verbs that can end in either ED or T are pretty often spelled with ED. If you see a verb ending with T, you think it's kind of unusual. You don't see it so much, except for those that have completely lost the ED ending, like the list here, kept, left, lost, meant, slept, swept. Those you always see like that. But it's rare. The first list, learnt, smelt, spelt, you don't see so much. Dreamt. Usually you see it in the ED form. Okay, let's look at page 49. Does anybody have a question about that's that? This is a good rule to know. Many verbs sound smoother followed by that. These verbs think, say, hope, feel, find, believe, and wish. You'll find a sentence can really be improved by putting that after these verbs. This is a very common editing improvement. I would make a note of it, put a star beside this or underline it or something, because these are words that you use quite often when you're writing and editing. And if you bear this guideline in mind, your editing will be improved. I think that he says that we hope that, and if you do without it, the sentence is a little clipped. If you do without that, it becomes a little clipped. In some cases, adding that can rescue a drowning sentence when a time element comes after the verb. Bob said that on Friday he would report. Yes, and it's confusing. It is confusing. Bob said on Friday. Does that mean he said it on Friday or that he would report on Friday? So you have to put that in there. He said on Friday that he would report.
Yeah, but he's there, so I was confused.
It's drowning. It's drowning. So you have to add the that.
Yeah, but it's not there for the context.
You have to save it by adding that. You have to be a lifesaver. When the point of the sentence comes late is another problem. Frank found the old violin in his attic. Where should you put that? Okay. And the last example, Hilda thinks the idea stinks and that Horace does too. No, that sounds like Horace stinks. Hilda thinks that the idea stinks and Horace does too. No, just say Hilda. That means Horace stinks. But you don't need that. You can say that without that. You can say that without the that. The way it reads now, it means that. It means that Horace stinks too. You could say Hilda thinks the idea stinks and Horace thinks that too. But in this case, it's necessary. It's necessary. The word that is necessary here. Otherwise, you've got this confusing meaning that she thinks the idea and Horace stink. So you have to put that in there. Hilda thinks that the idea stinks. And Horace thinks that too. You cannot say does that. You'd have to use the same verb. Horace thinks that too. Anything else? Yes, Kavi. As it is, it makes you think that. Well, you can read it that way. You can read it that way, but if you add that after thinks, then it becomes really clear. Hilda thinks the idea stinks, and Horace does too. Hilda thinks that the idea stinks, and Horace does too. That makes it just that much more clear. You should have, yes. It means that's the meaning. That's possible to read that meaning. Here's, if I read it like this. Hilda thinks the idea stinks and Horace does too. Hilda, or put if you put the that in the wrong place. Hilda thinks the idea stinks and that Horace does too. If you put the that before Horace, then it's emphasized that Horace also stinks. So you have to get the meaning as clear as possible. So when there are two verbs after the main one, what are the three verbs? Hilda thinks, the idea stinks, and Horace does. So you can clarify that by adding that. Hilda thinks that the idea stinks. And Horace does too. No, the first thing. Okay, let's go on to Splitsville. The best place to put an adverb is directly before the action being described. Try this sometime next time you do some editing. Try moving your adverbs ahead of the verbs and see if you like them. Some of them sound pretty good there. Some of them are improved there, but some of them don't work there. It's not 100% guaranteed that it'll work there. As she says, adverbs usually do the most good in front of the action words they describe. So be selective. The next one is good. Pundarik said he will make pancakes. Is that correct? No. When the first verb is in the present tense, use will. Pundarik says he will make pancakes. That's okay. But when it's Pundarik said in the past tense, then use would. This is very nice for getting agreement. It makes for agreement in the sentence. Remember we talked at the beginning how verbs have this dimension of tense. So this is a description of how to get the tenses to line up. Let's see if there's some other examples. We can test ourselves, see if we got it right. Okay, here's an example with three verbs. Here's an example with three verbs. You supply the answer, correct answer. Harry thought that if he eats or ate one pancake. Yes, Harry thought that if he ate one pancake, he will or would want another one. Would. All in the past tense. The first verb, thought, is in the past tense, so use the past tense, ate, and would. When the first verb is in the present, like thinks, use the present tense, eats and will. Harry thinks that if he eats one pancake, he will want another one. In the land of if, think of if as a tiny set of scales. That's not so important. Afterthoughts, that's also not so important, but it's good to know. Let's go on to the contractions. It's kind of surprising to find out about some of these older contractions. They're not used anymore. I shan't. Tis, sometimes you say tis. My country, tis of thee. We say in America, we have one song. My country, tis of thee. Sweet land of liberty. Yeah, it's poetic. Twas, twill, twid, twon't. They're really funny. It won't happen. So this idea of contracting words has a long history. And it's a combination of a verb and a subject, or the word not. So there's a lot of them, isn't there? I didn't count them, but there's at least two or three dozen. Some of them are common. Which ones? The old one, shan't. What was the question? Nobody now. No, these are too old. Yeah, tis maybe. Or to be funny, somebody might use one to be funny. Because, you know, it's just unacceptable. Because it ain't English. Yes. It ain't English. It's a word that, you know, it's around. The word is around. It exists. But you don't use it in written, any kind of written English. Isn't. It's a corruption of isn't. It's a corruption, you know. It's like a corrupt disk or something. If you use it, you're going to get your whole system in trouble. Think of it as that. It's corrupt. It's a corrupt form of the word isn't. And Maybe, yeah. Maybe. Because people who use it are kind of, they're not, people who use it are usually not concerned with speaking correctly. Lower class? Low class. Oh yeah. Such as the right way. Like these contractions or ain't? Ain't. But you don't have to worry about them. Just don't use them. No, time would not use this either. But they would not use this. This has been around for a long time. Ain't has been around for 50 years or more. But it's just not accepted. No, you say, aren't I? Yeah, that's true. Yes, even though it's plural. Aren't is up there at the beginning. Aren't I? You don't say, amped I. Amped doesn't exist. It's not even on her list. You thought of a word that's not even on her list. Amped I. That's a good one. Yeah, aren't I? I don't know why. I'd have to see what the... Well, you could say, aren't... You can use it for anything. Aren't I... You can say a quality. Aren't I honest? Aren't I going? Aren't I going? Am I not... You can also say that. Both. Now, why there's aren't, I don't know. I'd have to look up the history. No. No. Only if they make a mistake. Yes. Yeah. Aren't I included? Aren't. It works. Yeah, it works. It's used. I'll have to look into it. I'll try to find out why you can use aren't I. Okay, let's go on. Now there's something on page 40. Let's see, how far? 42. We're up to 42. I didn't ask you to read this, but it's something about the passive voice. Who would like to volunteer to read this? Who has a loud voice? To fly. Okay? Incorrect. 2 years ago, Whiskers was the first cat to have flown on the Concorde. It's incorrect. Correct? 2 years ago, Whiskers was the first cat to fly on the Concorde. You need...
Which one is correct now? You confuse the public.
Fly. Now here's the guideline. You need to use have only if you're talking about two different times in the past. Until last year, Whiskers was the only cat to have flown on the Concorde. Until last year. But 2 years ago is just one time and not two different times. Until last year, Whiskers was the only cat to have flown. In that case, you're talking about last year and now. Until last year. And before. Until last year, Whiskers was, at that time, that's the first time, last year at that time, Whiskers was the only cat to have flown prior to that. Until last year, Whiskers was, at that time, the only cat to have flown prior to that on the Concorde. Prior to that, there was no other cat until last year. Last year, that changed. Some other cat also flew. One of the times was last year. Until last year, that's one of the times, Whiskers was the only cat to have flown. The other period was before that. Until last year, and before that, Yeah, you have to like mentally, you know, figure it out. Until last year. Oh, I don't know. Hey, there's no homework. There's no homework tonight. This sentence. 2 years ago. 2 years ago is one time. 2 years ago was the Whiskers was the first kid. That means also the same time. 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
No, it's the same time. 2 years ago, Whiskers was the first cat. There's no prior time. You're not talking about a time before 2 years ago. Yes, because you have
last year
at that time, last year, and before that. 2 years ago is just one time. 2 years ago, 1999. I would have liked to go, or I would have liked to have gone. I would have liked to go. I would have liked to have gone. Don't use two haves. I would have liked to have gone. Okay, that's pretty good. We got through the verbs in 2 days. Tomorrow we're going to discuss... there's a little time today, so we could just run through this list, kind of like the previews. What's the meaning of dilemma, eclectic, hopefully, irony, literally and unique? Then there's mixed doubles, things that get mixed up. Pardon? Well, we'll go into that tomorrow. Today is just the previews. Here are the words we're going to discuss tomorrow. Amid, among, between. Bad, badly. We did a little of that already. We talked about adjectives that can be... That was on page 38, right? There were some... 28, I guess it was. On page 28, we already discussed words like cheap, cheaply, whether you have an L-Y ending. So this is an example of that, bad, badly. Continually, continuously, convince, persuade. We already did that today with the infinitives. That was in the list of infinitives today. You convince somebody to do something or you persuade them to do something, which do you do? We convince someone that something should happen. And we persuade somebody to do something. So there's a difference. Maybe there tomorrow there'll be more when we get to this tomorrow, maybe there'll be a little more explanation of why this should be convince without to and persuade with to. Maybe we'll get into that tomorrow more. Different than, different from. Each other, one another. Flounder, founder. If, whether, imply, infer, like, as. Use it right or lose it. Both, comprise, depends on, due to, likely, myriad, oblivious, whether or not. Spelling it right, accommodate, advertise, all round, ecstasy, embarrass, fulfill, judgment, toward. Sometimes toward is towards. Especially in British English. So we'll discuss the differences. One word or two. Already, already, altogether, altogether. Any more, any place, any time, any way, a while, every day, everyone, everyone. Constructions, either or. Only, this devotee says that he sees Krishna. Tomorrow we'll play this game where we put only before each of these words in that sentence. This devotee says that he sees Krishna. Only this devotee says that he sees Krishna. This devotee only says that he sees Krishna. This devotee says only that he sees Krishna. This devotee says that only he sees Krishna. This devotee says he only sees Krishna. This devotee says he sees only Krishna. Has a different meaning in each case. Overriders, in order to, unless or until. Department of Hot Air. Paradigm. Parameters. hot air means what? No, you're just blowing air. Like hot air means like a hot air. Hot air, hot air. What's hot air, Pundarik? It means you're talking. You're talking, but it's like in the summer. You're surrounded by hot air in the summer. On a very hot day, you're surrounded by hot air. You just, it's too much. You know, I don't want it. Too much hot air. So sometimes talking is like that. Somebody shoots a word at you, and it's just like a hot summer day. It's, forget it. You call that a word, a lot, all right, irregardless. And then, and, when do you use those? Etc. And so on. Yeah. So we'll go tomorrow through pages 43 through 47. And then we have one day left for grammar, and we'll try to finish up some grammar lessons this week.